Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association.
Warren Berger has studied hundreds of the world's leading innovators, entrepreneurs, and creative thinkers to learn how they ask questions, generate original ideas, and solve problems. His writing and research on questioning and innovation has appeared in Fast Company, Harvard Business Review, and Wired. He's the author of the internationally acclaimed book Glimmer, an in-depth analysis of creative thinking that was named one of Business Week's best innovation and design books of the year. Warren has appeared on NBC's Today Show, on ABC's World News, on CNN and NPR's All Things Considered. His latest book, which I must confess I finished reading 2 days ago, is A More Beautiful Question. Warren, welcome to AMA Edgewise.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Okay, so Warren, why are so many leaders, whether they're business leaders, societal leaders, government leaders, why are they so afraid of questions?
Questioning is an interesting thing. As I got into studying it for the book, I found that there was what I thought of as a love-hate relationship with questioning in the business world. And the love part is that business leaders are increasingly coming to recognize that questioning is connected to innovation, that it's almost the starting point of innovation. You see that a lot of innovations, if you trace them back to the roots and to the origins, it starts with people figuring out the right questions to ask. And I think business leaders, they understand that on some level. But on the other hand, there's a lot of things about questioning that makes business leaders and middle managers and people throughout levels of business, there are aspects of questioning that make them uncomfortable. It has to do with trying to live with uncertainty, which a lot of business people are very uncomfortable with. They kind of want the answers right now. They want to know, what are we doing now? And the other thing is that questioning is also associated with challenging authority. And when you're in a hierarchical structure, you don't necessarily want people challenging authority. So I think those are the two big issues that are at work. And then there's one other thing, which is that, and this is true for all of us, a lot of times the reason we don't ask certain questions is because we're either afraid of the answers we're going to come up with, we're afraid we're not going to like the answers, or we're deathly afraid that we won't know the answer once we've raised the question. So I think all of those things combine to make people a little uncomfortable with questioning.
Many parents are both enthralled and yet annoyed at their younger children's ability to endlessly spew questions. Why do kids stop asking questions?
That's an interesting thing. I studied what's going on in childhood development with questioning. It's absolutely fascinating. One study found that kids ask 10,000 questions a year during the ages of 3, 4, and 5, which is just amazing. You know, they're asking 100 questions or a couple hundred questions a day toward their parents, mostly. And then they go into school, you know, around age 5, and suddenly the questioning just drops. It almost comes to a stop by the time they're in, say, junior high school. So this is an interesting phenomenon, and there's a lot of reasons for it. Some of it have to do with the way our brains develop and the fact that we start to know more, and as we know more, we ask less. That's kind of a natural thing. But there's also definitely something going on in our education system that tamps down questioning and curiosity. It has to do with an education system that was based on testing and rewarding people for having answers and not really rewarding questions and oftentimes not having time for questions in the class and in the lesson. The questions are seen as a distraction. So I think that's part of what happens. You know, we internalize this when we're young, the idea that questions are kind of annoying and they, you know, they're a distraction and they slow things down. We pick up that message, and so a lot of us stop questioning or we're reluctant to ask a lot of questions. We also pick up on certain social signals, like if you ask a question, it reveals a weakness about you. Maybe it suggests you don't know something. So I think all of this combines to make us ask less and less questions.
Is it possible to teach or to train ourselves to question?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. I mean, I think what happens is, you know, there are some people who never stop questioning. Look at the tech leaders today, Larry Page running Google. You can go back to Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos. These are people who, when they were very young, they were questioners. Some of them went through Montessori-type schooling. some of them were dropouts, but, you know, but they were always questioning when they were very young, and that carried over into their professional life. So it's a very natural thing for some people to just keep on questioning. For others, for the rest of us, we still know how to question. I mean, it's a natural instinct we were born with, and it's like a muscle that we maybe have not kept using as much as we should have kept using it, but it's still there. You know, it may have atrophied a little bit, but it's still there. So I think what you can do is to get yourself to question more. The first thing you have to do is realize that it's okay to question. And you really shouldn't be shy about asking questions. If you have a question about something and you're genuinely curious, you should ask those questions, not only of others, but of yourself. I mean, you should be willing to ask difficult questions of yourself in your own work, in your own company, in your own life. So I think the first thing is accepting that questions are okay. You train yourself to get better at observing, listening. These are things that sort of feed into questioning. Questioning comes out of seeing, noticing interesting things, noticing problems that maybe other people haven't noticed, and then asking, why is that a problem? So I think it starts with accepting the fact that questioning is okay. Then it moves to trying to get yourself to step back, look at things a little differently, listen a little more closely, and be willing to question the things you see and hear.
All right. Again, I told you I just finished reading the book not too long ago, and I also have done interesting interviews with other authors on the subject of pervasive databases of social information that are out there, Wikipedia, Google, stuff like that. So I'll just toss the ping pong ball over to you, and I'll say, won't Google solve all of my problems?
No, it won't. If only it were true. But, you know, the problem with Google is Google is great, and Google helps us to be better questioners in some ways, because Google provides this massive amount of information that we can use as we're exploring questions. The problem with Google is that Google only tells you what is known already. Google is a great source for the conventional wisdom that's out there, and you can grab it off of Google. The issue is that I talk about in the book is that if you really want to make progress, I mean, if you really want to do something special with your business or even in your life, you're looking for original ideas. You're looking for new ways of thinking about things. And you're not going to get that off Google. The way I think of it is when you tackle really interesting questions, a Google search is not going to help you. You have to go on a different kind of search that is much more exhaustive, where you are living with a question, exploring it from a lot of angles, sharing it with people to get their ideas, and following that question wherever it leads you to get to an answer. And I think this is really an important concept, because a lot of us have internalized this idea that, oh, the answers are all right out. They're out there. All the answers are there. They're right at my fingertips, and all I have to do is type in a query. No, it's not the case. The answers are not out there. The answers have to be found. They have to be developed. You have to sort of work on the important answers and arrive at them yourself if you want it to be your answer, if you want it to be your idea, your original approach, your signature style, whatever it is. If you want it to be yours, well, you've got to find it yourself. You've got to create it yourself. And Google will help you get started on that journey, but it certainly won't take you there.
A question that's also sort of in the neighborhood of that one might be something like, should questions just be concerned with facts, or is there room for sort of an emotional component in there as well?
There's all kinds of questions. And when we're talking about very superficial and practical questions, a lot of times, a fact is all you want. What time did this happen? Or who invented the such and such? All you're looking for there is a fact, something very basic. That's the kind of stuff you can get off of Google or out of an encyclopedia or lots of places. But I think when you are pursuing deeper questions and more meaningful questions, you're not really looking for facts. You're looking for insights. You're looking for ideas. You're looking for possibilities. You're looking for these big, intangible things that they're not going to be handed to you. You're going to have to figure them out for yourself. And that's why I think of questioning as being a journey. Questions leads you on a journey to figure something out. And I think it's wonderful. You know, I'm on one of those journeys right now with this subject and with this book. And my question, my beautiful question that I'm pursuing is, how can I learn more about questioning? And then how can I share that? How can I get the word of that out there to more and more people? And it's a huge puzzle, a huge challenge that I'll probably be working on for, who knows, for years. And I believe that we should all have those kinds of questions in our lives. Something that we're pursuing, something that's bigger than ourselves, something that's really ambitious and that you can work on for a long, long time. And it pulls you along, keeps you moving forward.
Do you mind briefly just describing the why, what if, and how questioning process you've laid out in your book?
It's an interesting thing. First of all, let me say there's no formula for questioning. We all ask questions in different ways, and we all ask different types of questions, and we all try to answer questions in our own way. But I thought it might be useful to provide a little guideline to people based on what I observed as I watched and as I studied master questioners, you know, the people that I thought of as really good innovators, entrepreneurs, creative thinkers, scientists. These are people who are really great at raising questions and then answering them. And we're talking about big questions, you know, really difficult questions that involve creating a whole new business or inventing something, doing something totally original. I studied how they go through questioning, and I found that there was an interesting cycle that happens in many cases, not all, but in many. They start with why, then they proceed to what if, and then they end up with how. And what I mean by that is the why is when you first confront a situation or a problem, the kind of questions you ask have to do with why does this situation exist? Why is it a problem? Why has nobody solved it before? Why is it something I might want to work on? Why might I want to make this my problem to work on? And so you sort of have this initial stage where you're trying to figure out the situation. Then you move to a stage of what if. And what if is about, okay, you've embraced this problem or this situation, and now what are you going to do about it? How are you going to think about this? What if you try this idea? What if you came at it from that angle? It's all about, at that point, ideation, right? It's about using your imagination to look at a problem and come up with lots of possible approaches, lots of ways to come at it. So that's the what if stage, really wide open, blue sky, brainstorming stage of questioning. At some point, you have to get to how. And how, to me, is the practical stage of questioning. And that's when, okay, you've identified the problem. You've come up with a lot of ideas, but now you got to do something. If you want to get beyond theory or philosophy or speculation, you've got to begin to make things happen. And the how stage to me is when you actually start to try to come up with action steps. Maybe it's sketching an idea out. Maybe it's talking to people about it, getting their feedback. Maybe it's running an experiment of some kind. Maybe it's creating a prototype, doing a beta website, whatever it is. There's all kinds of ways you can begin to work on an idea. But the how stage is where you give form to your questions. You begin to make them real and tangible and turn them into something. And I found that oftentimes innovators go through those stages, and it's really important. That's how they end up innovating, you know, because they don't just ask questions. They make progress, and they move from a certain kind of speculative questioning to a action-oriented questioning, and that's what gets them places.
Now, my final question is, I took this whole interview as sort of a meta question within a question, questions about questions and questions about the book about questions. But just to wrap up here, try to put a bow on this thing, how do I know I'm asking the right question?
Well, you know, you don't at the time. when you're first raising a question, you probably don't know. Some of it is instinct. I always feel when you're looking at a problem and you're asking questions, a lot of times when you ask a good question, it's almost like a light bulb goes off. You know what I mean? It lights up. You kind of get that feeling like, aha, that's interesting. That question has some power to it. So there is a feeling you get sometimes when you've asked a really good question about a problem or a situation, and you should pay attention to those instincts because those instincts oftentimes are very on target. However, you also have to work on a question and figure out if it's the right question over time. There have been lots of cases, and there are stories in the book that I talk about where people start out trying to answer a question about a problem, and they gradually realize they're trying to work on the wrong question. It's coming at the problem in the wrong way. It's misidentifying what the real problem is. So those kind of things sometimes you can only find out over time. And the way you'll know is if you're asking the right question, you're going to keep learning and you're going to keep making progress. You'll keep moving forward on whatever the challenge is. If you're at a dead end, then it means you might be asking the wrong question. If you have reached a point where you are just absolutely stopped on a question that you're trying to answer and you're not getting anywhere, there's a chance that you're asking the wrong question, and you might have to go back and take that question apart, turn it upside down, figure out how to rephrase it, look at the assumptions that might be within that question. The assumptions might be wrong. So you might have to reconstruct that question a little bit and come at it a different way.
We've been speaking to Warren Berger. He's author of a great new book entitled A More Beautiful Question. Warren, thanks for being with us today.
It was my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.